for the rest of the people. Okay. Okay, we're going to have another lecture of Agile for today. How do I do this? I want to be on this side of the table. Okay, on Tuesday we discussed something like this. The main thing, we used pretty much of time discussing about the Agile history and how the whole movement, whole discussion on Agile have evolved during the past 15 to 20 years, basically. And I discussed about this contrasting that describes the early years of Agile discussion in which they try to put Agile in a strict box, like here, and contrast it to another box describing waterfall or something like that, traditional model. And we ended up finding that the discussion has evolved, and the Agile actually means a bit different thing if we think about the whole history. Like I said, in the early days, Agile manifesto came up that has a set of values and principles. That's kind of one way to put it there, what is Agile. It's one way to understand Agile. Then we discussed about different Agile methods a bit, not much. But we contrasted, for example, XP, Extreme Programming, and Scrum. Scrum discusses more about project management level, and Extreme Programming more about actual development practices. And there is no point in comparison of the two methods. They kind of give different kind of answer to different kind of questions. So the point here was that if we want to think what Agile is, it may mean a different thing. Some emphasize the project management point of view, some the development, and so on. And then we come to the discussion today. The Agile means a bit different thing from the early days of Agile. In the early days, the discussion tried to put the Agile in the box. I showed on Tuesday some slides of the material from almost 15 years ago. There was some rough contradiction between Agile and waterfall, plan-driven development. So Agile was characterized in very extreme way. The idea was to conclude that it's proper for simplifying the thing, and that is proper for small teams, small organizations, non-critical projects, and so on. But what we discuss in Agile today, it's more about what if we have critical projects, big organization, regulated in environments, and all these things that initially were pretty much against this extreme Agile thinking. What if we have all this, but we still want to be Agile? At least we want to call it Agile. Or in these terms, the whole concept of Agile has been diminished to a couple of basic things, I would say. I didn't give any definition. You find easily many if you try to Google it. But I would say most important things usually you find there is some... it's highly iterative, short cycles, and then you try to be as open as you can to changes, change of the requirements during the project. Okay, two basic things. But so the whole discussion of today, okay, here I put here research and practice separately. My perception is that in Agile discussion, the researchers and the practitioners and business, they talk pretty much about the same thing. They share the same interests. What? How can we scale agile in big organizations? Some specific situations and so on. But if you take some other field in software engineering, for example, it might be that academia and practitioners, business, they are interested in completely different topics, but it's not agile. But the point here was that, and if you read current literature, reference to agile means a bit different thing than it meant 15 years ago. Okay, let's go on. We ended pretty much here. So the typical question in some recent research during the past 10 years are something like this. How to scale to be agile to large project or organization? How to adopt agile? So how to take care of the whole transformation process in the organization? What about distributed projects, which leads often to global settings? What other questions come there? How does it fit to agile, or how to adapt agile to that kind of environment? What does it mean? What does it really mean? And to requirements engineering, what kind of special questions come there? Critical projects, regulated environment. What about contracting? Does this affect on how we do contracts in the business? Quality assurance activities. What about architecture? And then if we have a lot of processes already in organizations, the bigger organization, the more we have typically organizational practices and processes already. And how about this agile? How do we balance between these two? Both has some pros and cons, and how do we balance with this? Okay, some questions quickly. Okay, this is... And we are going to discuss some of these today with some material. But now, I want to get your heads here in the business. Now, for the beginning, style is free. Again, we used before in Padlet. You find it if you have a laptop, you find it in Moodle. Let's use 10 minutes. Try to... Okay, you can use your common sense. You can do some quick Google search. But try to answer the question. Quickly put something in Padlet wall. 10 minutes. What if we want to scale agile to a big project or organization? What are the challenges, issues, problems, whatever you call them? What is the contradiction? Why does it fit? Why possibly agile principles in the manifesto? Is there some contradiction if you take them to the bigger scale? Okay, these kind of questions. Get me something. 10 minutes.
Okay, I think it's fine enough for now. Let's take some points here. Actually, do I get this open?
Okay, let's look something here. Okay, complexity crisis. It's harder to maintain the whole package. Okay, natural. Challenges with too big team sizes. Meetings take longer. Why? Do you want to explain? Did you find a reason for this?
It's okay, makes some sense. Maybe it's not from the book, but from in some reports, it has been an issue raised that when they have adopted agile,
the conclusion was that too much more time in meetings compared to what they did before. Okay, this all depends. It depends on how they did things before and what kind of meetings in their agile and so on. But okay, one general finding. Okay, what else? Keep specialization is a good word. Could someone try to explain what this means in agile context? Did you get that? It's here and in some other comment it was also. I think it was from the material. It's it's one issue in the adoption of the agile based on more traditional style. We're going to come back to that a bit later. But it relates, specialization issues relate to a different kind of thinking in agile philosophy. If you try to take that in the book, there is this kind of idea that we are a big family and share, happy family and share everything together and do everything has a voice to participate decisions and so on. This kind of we share all the, it's all together philosophy to exaggerate a bit. And one part of that is that in a team, everybody does anything and everything. No specialization in teams. So that's one part of the discussion. So at least, and it may relate to this scaling up also. Coordination challenges, many agile teams, of course, if you have to share tasks to different teams, we come back to that again in some points. Agile way of doing might not suit for every process. Okay, yes, some comments on that also a bit later. Organizational structure. Okay, this is contrast between existing and or previous organizational structures and agile, how to fit them together. Okay, how to make many teams to work together. Okay. Good. Okay, this is good. Good start. Let's take a look some material a bit related on this. Okay. Generally of this question, if you think about the scaling up to large projects. Okay, this other aspects are often involved. So if you have big project, we often have a big organization, enable big project. It's if we have a big project, big organization to do it, we have often distributed teams globally sometimes. And so on. So these themes are pretty much related often in the literature. So, and then just for the start, I'm going to go through some material here and there. We don't go to any so deep through details of each of these perspectives. We would need a whole course for it, or maybe a couple, but there would be a lot of details to discuss about related to those issues which you already found very quickly. But I go through some ideas, some thoughts, some references, material around this, and we take some details here and there. And often when you read material, and also in the material I'm going to go through here, these two perspectives are a bit mixed. Like I said on Tuesday about your course readings, that case report from Ericsson's organizational transition to agile, the perspectives are a bit different. That emphasizes that organizational change focus, but also agile specific issues are included. So some of these things we discuss about, because the material which you read often, especially if you read case reports, it's often some kind of organizational change report, some transition from waterfall to agile or something like that. So those perspectives are mixed. Some of them speak about generally organizational change, and some of it are agile specific issues. So to like this, I think I'm gonna have to be here. So like to start, this is a literature review, references at the bottom. It included a number of case reports that had implemented, the case report studied large-scale agile transformation. So large-scale means big enough organization, big enough project or something like that. And there are specific details in the paper if you want to take a look at it. They made specific definitions how to select papers for the study. But they collected a number of, I don't remember now, how many case reports they have in this study, but they analyzed different issues, challenges they had faced in this kind of large-scale transformation cases from traditional to agile way of doing things. And so it starts with the classic organizational change issue. So there is resistance to change at some level everywhere you do organizational change. Nothing special there. Some agile-specific issues, like it depends a bit on the change in an organization. This second point here under this, that is skepticism towards the new way of working. So for me, it depends on the organization how much you have this kind of size thinking. I think this kind of business, we have engineers, highly educated people, smart people, knowledge work like this. They are experts. It's their identity. They are smart. They want to know the thing, and they are right in their perspective. Okay, there is this kind of mindset often in this kind of engineering field, the background, and I think it may escalate this kind of thinking and specific kind of resistance to change. The people who think they are smart, they know everything, they are the top experts in the company, and they pretty much like the way they have done the things before. And then you try to bring new ideas to that kind of mindset, that might be a challenging. This refers there. The top-down mandate here means like when you bring things top-down from management to bottom, there are some issues like this kind of knowledge work engineering field may not be the best place to do that from top down. But of course, in large organizations, you have to do that at some level. Yeah, you cannot. In some cases, in team level, the most successful cases have been in agile adoption, those who came up from the team from bottom up. But it's hard to do organizational change, really organization-wide transformation from bottom up. It must come at some level from management, but there are some specific issues with that. And the other thing they mentioned in the paper about this is that that doesn't kind of fit to the whole this agile philosophy thinking which we discussed, this common ownership of things, shared responsibility philosophy, self-oriented teams, this kind of agile principles, values, philosophy there in the background. And there, if we at the same time to want to launch this kind of new philosophy of shared ownership, big happy family together, and at the same time there is this kind of top-down management style, they possibly don't fit together the best possible way. Okay, management unwilling to change that natural, especially in agile cases, in big hierarchical organizations, the middle management has been the biggest issue referred in many case studies. That kind of it's hard to find new role to the middle management, and they may be most possible managers to resist the change in the new setting. So, okay, let's go forward. Lack of investment, the second main point here. Okay, if you don't invest enough for the change, you have to understand that it how much effort it takes to do organization-wide change this big. So, the specific issues mentioned here were lack of coaching training, too high workload. Refers to the thing that possibly they didn't understand how much effort it requires also from the developers to adopt new practices. You give high time pressure workload to do the project, and at the same time you should learn new things, new ways to do things. So you can imagine yourself, if you have done something thousands of times, you do it easily without effort. It's you have some routines for it, but if you have to learn new way to do it at the same time, it takes much more time. So this wasn't understood very well. Like this relates to the same thing, new commitments, where they had some own projects going on at the same time, requiring workload. So it's a So one minor issue was rearranging physical spaces like this. Agile, we share everything, includes often the idea of physical spaces. You don't have own offices, but open spaces, and to enable better communication. And so on. Some issues were related to that. Agile, it's difficult to implement. This kind of issues raised was raised in the case reports. So understanding agile concept was kind of, at least my interpretation of the study was that it took more time to really understand the agile concept they wanted to launch in the organization than they expected. So, and some misunderstandings in the organization led bad results. Lack of guidance from the literature referred. This is kind of natural. The starting point for this, basically, world has changed a bit, but there are possibly nowadays a bit more support for this kind of large-scale organizational changes. But if you have a research literature review written 2000 or published 2016, it means that many of the papers are written 10 years ago or some even older. And so this means that this is often referred in the case reports. If you read agile papers, that they would have needed more support for an understanding for how to do it really in practice and in the large scale. So in the beginning they maybe had Scrum Book and Agile Manifesto, And then they try to figure out how to do this in practice. So what they would like to have in industry is to have a book, or not, no, sorry, not a book, but one paper describing 10 clear steps how to do things in practice and live life happily ever after. So, but they didn't get this. And so, on the other side, when you have the clear steps from some book or consultant, if you do everything by the book, the result is often reported that it didn't work like it expected. You should have invested more time in thinking how to adapt these principles in your own organization needs. So, but anyway, this referred to the agile customer poly. It's the next finding here. It's so, and then finding is that if something doesn't go on so fluently, you have time, effort during the transition phase. Many people tend to go back to the old habits and old ways of doing. Excessive enthusiasm around agile refers to, okay, like I referred in last lecture, that in some parts of the movement, the discussion has been pretty dogmatic. Like there is a real fan club of some agile thinking overall or some specific method, and there are some people in the organization who are really excited about it, and the whole discussion reminds of some kind of new religion. It becomes dogmatic, and people get careful about it. It shares easily people to two sides, for or against the new movement, and something like that. This, so the finding. This is what. This is the phenomenon they refer to in this paper. This is kind of something, maybe this is not only special for agile, but in agile movement there has been this kind of issues during the years. Okay, then we come some more agile specific issues. Coordination challenges in multi-team environment. Naturally, you found that easily when we used the Padlet. So like when you more so basically the agile methods originally they are meant for. The practices, if you do them by book, they speak mostly about one team. How to Scrum, if it's focused on project management, it's still the focus is in one team. How to handle that project for one some size of team, not too big. So when you have multiple teams, you have to coordinate between the teams. How to, and there are several issues found here and referred in the paper, like how to take care of the interfaces of the teams. Some refer that this works a bit. This sharing the workload works a bit better when you had waterfall. In the beginning, you use a lot of effort for design and do architecture, and then split the project to different work packages and share the task for different teams. But this doesn't follow the agile principles. You must have continuous discussion between the teams going on, and it's challenging. And if you add here the agile principle of self-oriented teams, you give them responsibilities. In many cases, this was the founding that caused some issues, that the teams ended up doing things in distributed environment a bit different ways. They may have different coding standards. They may have a bit different schedules. And so on. If you allow this kind of self-orientation, that causes problem if you have to coordinate the work between the teams. It may cause some issues with architectural design of overall picture of the whole thing and such like things. Okay, like it's the fifth point here, different approaches emerge in multi-team environment. So this again relates to the self-oriented. In a big teams, if in a big organization you have some organizational practices, but if you try to do it a bit more agile way, give more responsibility to different teams, they really may do things a different way. And they may interpret the whole concept of agile a bit differently, and so on. Okay, this is balancing thing. How much you really give in this kind of setting this power to the teams to design themselves how to do the things, or how much things you design a kind of process-based approach, which we didn't discuss before. And try to define organizational standards and processes and follow up that every team everywhere works the same way, have same standards, and so on. But okay, using old and new approaches side by side. This refers, okay, actually this was referred in different places in the paper, that one example is design. It meant that if some teams in the organization follow waterfall and then you have agile teams, and there is management who still has waterfall mindset, and the requirement from the management might be that you still do a lot of design up front in the beginning, kind of old-fashioned waterfall style. And then after that, you may do some iterations, agile style. So you have an agile team, but still pretty comprehensive documentation on upfront design is required. These kind of situations happen when you mix different styles. You kind of try to do double work. Okay, hierarchical management and organizational boundaries. Okay, it was referred here. So I mentioned that the role of middle management was a bit problematic. They didn't find the kind of idea of whole agile movement. Chains would be to lower the hierarchy in organization, share responsibility, and then the middle management is often the issue. And keeping the old bureaucracy, it was found often that, okay, when the old way of doing things, I think this is nothing special to agile, but it's just it happens also in this case, that when you do this kind of organization-wide transition, it, no matter what you do and how you do in a big organization, it needs pretty much of some kind of management called bureaucracy here. It's, if you have old ways to do the bureaucracy, the organization may not understand how to drop off the unnecessary old habits in management. But managers still try to keep the old habits, and then when you create something new like agile here, it brings its own kind of management in. Then in the worst case, you do double bureaucracy all the time. internal silos, okay, that refers to specialization and such like issues. You keep some organizational structure, this kind of expertise, different departments specialized in different things at the same time as you try to implement agile issues where you are expected to share everything. That's kind of issue. Requirement engineering. Okay, this was one issue. This has been discussed a lot. Okay, a couple of words later about that. But then this, the basic issue is that then if you take that Scrum book and try to implement Agile based on that with the organization, you and the organization happens to be multi-teams, big project kind of setting, you have those practices in Scrum for that one single team and no support for how to manage the overall picture. If you have this size of project or product development going on there and every team does only a bit of it, how to manage the overall picture and manage requirements, change management in the overall picture, not just in one team and backlog there in sprint and in one sprint in that Scrum kind of thinking. So creating and estimating user stories here. Okay, this what was meant in the paper here. Here there's in some cases you had in product business, especially you had in the worst case some marketing department created very very business level general business requirements for the story, and then if you try to do this kind of overnight, however they did that, but sudden change to agile from waterfall. In waterfall kind of thinking, you used pretty much time for requirements engineering up front in the beginning, and to do more specific definitions of different requirements. But here, I don't know if any agile book advised to do it this way, but this was reported by the organizations who did this in this way and tried to implement agile, like the way you forgot that requirements, comprehensive requirements engineering states. You got this very general level business requirements, and then you use as little time as much as possible for doing more specific user stories in agile terms to get on to the actual development for the first print. To make this very simple. Okay, but this caused that they found it very difficult to create good user stories out of this, and especially to support estimation of the size of the project. Okay, that would require a bit more time to explain it, but that was a brief version. Then gap between long and short-term planning. Okay, we're going to have a couple of words of that later. Quality assurance challenges faced in these reports, commanding non-functional testing. I don't know the details. It was very briefly discussed in this literature survey, where my question here is why So, because I don't know if any agile book, if you do it by the book, advise to forget all these things, but it possibly the issue background, if I have to guess, somehow that if you start doing agile, first time in a really agile way, you may, it's in several case reports that you may focus on those new features in ongoing sprint too much. You focused on small scale too much, and so the whole point of everything you do is to provide new customer value in these agile terms by providing as effectively as you can new features to the software. And then it may end up that you forget everything else that is also important. So no proper testing or something like that. Okay, let's forget the rest of this and let's go on to get something else discussed also. Okay, in your course readings, that first paper, it's this Paasivaara paper. Here is one example referred to this, what I just explained. If you have this kind of short-term focus in the project, that all you are interested in is the current sprint and providing the new functionalities for the software as fast as possible. You try to maximize the number of new features for each sprint and provide maximum business value this way. So what happened in this case in Ericsson was that they tried to do that first. And one consequence of this was that they found out at some point that internal quality, so this means architecture, design, whatever you call it, was really bad at some point, and they had to change something. They used some Scrum kind of model for Agile, and in the beginning, they kind of in the transition, they forgot the architect at all, and just focused on sprint by sprint, this kind of new features for the product. And at some point, they found out that okay, first we need an architect again to take care of the overall picture, and for in each sprint, we must allocate some time for this kind of more general issues to take care of. Okay, you need time for several things. All of these were not referred in that paper, but these are just the examples. So you end up in a bad situation if you focus if you focus only on the small scale, because you need time to take care of the architecture, design, refactoring in some agile terms. You have to allocate time for these also, not only for developing new features. You need to have some time to think over the team practices at team level. If you speak about a bigger organization, you need some time to think about practices or tools. Let's say starting from testing automatization, which is still pretty active topic of discussion in the field. You need some time to develop that. It doesn't happen for free. Or quality assurance, you can't forget that, and so on.
Okay, maybe I'm not gonna go these. These are well enough explained in the paper if you when you read it in the. So regular environment. You have another paper of this one example. I'm not going to go to details about this, but this is just one example to explain it, what it means when you have regulated environment. And if you read that Fitzgerald paper, what is the overall thinking there behind? That means that regulated means that you may have some legislation in the background, the business may require some quality management system, some strict practices, whatever, depending on the field. There are some general examples in the paper when you read it. But if I come, I don't know much about medicine and medical research or anything related, but I can imagine something that, at general level, that let's say in pharmaceutical industry, if you want to bring a new medicine, new drug to market, there is strict legislation. I think we have something common in the European area, and then we have some national legislation on this, and there are strict rules what you have to do. You must have some quality assurance systems. You must have quality management system, including some strict protocols and how you do research, what kind of tests you must do, how many participants for how many years, or I don't know what are the details, but strict rules what you have to do. And the point here is that you must have the rules, you must follow them, you must have detailed documentation on that to prove afterwards. The idea kind of here is that there are strict rules, we must follow the rules, we must document that we have followed the rules, and if something goes wrong, we can kind of say it wasn't our fault. We did everything by the book. Not our fault. So this doesn't fit perfectly in systems development, but this is kind of the mindset. If you read this kind of paper, this is the mindset in the background. When we are in cooperation with other fields that has stronger mindset like this, this is the idea in the background that we based on this kind of thinking, we have the requirements to have some quality management system. We must have strict practices. If we have this same comes inside our field, if we have critical domain, we have really critical software, even if we don't have some legislation to create these kind of regulations, the same ideas have come to the field that we must. If you have a critical project, there is an idea that we must do something like this. Define strict rules, follow the rules by the book, document that. We must document how excessive testing we have done, see, and kind of like if we could say that it wasn't our fault. It's a stupid idea in software engineering. And so whose fault is it if we have a bug in our software? But still, this is the thinking in the background. I just wanted to give this example when you read the paper. So this is the kind of the basis for it. Okay, just a couple of issues about quality assurance and agile. Okay, to be very brief, that again,
that focus on small scale, short term, in agile, if you do it in extremely that way, may lead to forgetting quality assurance activities like testing. When I think I refer to this test coverage issue in the quality lecture, that in agile and test-driven development is one common practice in agile, and that has led to discussion about test coverage. Also, already managers understand what it means at some level, and there is some stupid idea of kind of over overemphasizing test coverage idea. That's one detail here. So again, it doesn't mean anything if you have 100% test coverage in your unit tests. Okay, it's maybe a good signal, but it doesn't guarantee that you have high quality software. Sometimes in the discussions, it's simplified as this: you have taken care of quality assurance if you have such unit tests which have 100% test coverage. So, okay. Another thing, it's been discussed, I don't have any answers to this. These are just topics that have discussed in the field, that, like I said, this kind of philosophy in Agile has been to share responsibilities, to forget so-called old-fashioned specialization, no developers, separate developers and testers and business analysts, but everybody in the team can do anything. This is kind of agile ideal for setting the task. And this has been discussed related to, for example, testing. So, and some people think that it's really different skill sets, even if technical expertise is required for both development and testing. But if you don't have deep through experience in testing and such like expertise, you may not have be a good tester. Okay, let's forget that point for now. But briefly, that reference to the definition of software testing, which I showed before in the previous. So the quality lecture. The point here is that it's some intentional activity for finding errors. In Agile, sometimes if I put this very simple, the discussion is all about some unit tests. The designer, all that matters then, that the developer writes some kind of unit test to ensure as big test coverage as possible, and that's it. That's pretty far from. And then you have automated test sets, which you can run anytime, and then it's pretty far from this kind of intentional activities, systematic planned activities in order to find bugs in a software. So, okay, just one comment here. This relates to what we discussed about briefly about software reviews and inspections, the activities in which we read some documentation to find defects in the documents. Basically, the idea is that the sooner we find the defects, the easier and cheaper it is to fix them. So basically, the question that if we do agile in a very extreme way and minimize all the documentation we have. If we don't have formal documentation, it's hard to review the documents, which we don't have. We must do the, if we want to do something like this, we must find a new way to do it, or we just forget it. I don't have an answer to the question which is the best way ever develop software and run the business here in these terms. But this is just one comment. We have some practices in traditional way of doing software which have been found very beneficial in the field. But if we do agile in an extreme way, we must forget it. Okay, then I had here a bit different paper. This is again a literature review, including 17 different case studies. But the focus here was on different people issues around agile. Now, these are interesting, a bit different viewpoints. Just briefly, it's okay. This relates to several different things. Let's say in agile, lack of business knowledge. What this manager? This is a direct quote from the paper and in the paper from the from an interview. And so, background for this kind of comment is that you. If you really had an on-site customer all the time or regularly in contact with the whole team, not only your project manager, like traditionally in waterfall kind of models, so it caused some consequences, like this lack of business refers there that you easily harm your relationship with the customer if the customer finds out that your developers have no clue about any business things. This is in this paper, in several points, this is one something crucial change. If you have the customer collaborating with the whole team, it's a dramatic change to the old way of doing things. In the traditional way of doing things, you send the best guy of in-house to communicate with the customer, to be convincing and be face of your project and your organization, market your organization. But in this way of doing things, you take the customer in and your customer is free to meet any of your developers and communicate with them. There is a lot of more trust needed between the parties. So, okay. Some general issues here also. Understanding agile values and principles was difficult at some times. Lack of motivation. Not all people wanted to do agile. Like I said, some old experts who have done this 20 years successfully, they are not all excited about any new practices. Devolved decision making. Now I don't remember what was actually in the paper related to that. So let's forget it for now. Implementing agile compliant performance evaluation means that when you have in the organization, in an organization you have some ways to evaluate developers or generally employees' performance for salary or whatever you do, some in an organization. So you have to, if you in the old way, you have these specializations. You specialize in testing, developing, analysis, whatever. And if you change this really to agile way, everyone does everything kind of philosophy, you need completely new ways. This doesn't consider only the developer team, but this is about HR in the organization. You need different ways to assess performance of the people, their skills, and so on. And this was referred also in these recruiting challenges. It means that if you really bring up this ideal of everybody does everything, and then you try to get new people in and want to get people that understand the business development, testing, they know how to communicate with the customer. That's a lot of skills, and it's hard to find such people. Okay. So new challenges for HR from this perspective also. Then this relates to the, for example, to the customer communication also. The developer's fear of skill deficiency exposure. It means that basically anybody can be in communication with customers. And in some old ways, it was referred that in the old way of doing things, even in the same team, people pretty much share the task and everybody could do the thing in their own office and then just bring some delivery in. But here in the agile way of doing things, you are expected to share your ideas in the very beginning, to participate in communication all the time, and it's kind of some developers feared for that. They didn't want to do that. Express their ideas, thinking they halfly done deliveries or whatever. Broader skill set for development. Okay, we discussed kind of this already. Okay, increased social interaction relates to the things if you really communicate regularly, daily basis, and share the ideas and so on. And say, so it's different. Couple of papers, I skipped this very briefly. This is one theme generally in the discussion, this balancing agile, wild and free teams to do however they want, whatever they will do in an extreme way and define processes. There are, just to mention, these are both of the references I have here. They are from CMMI people, but there has been some tries to you know, integrate these two. Like, for example, this paper from 2008 already, it tries to integrate the two ideas. And you can easily see some mapping there that, okay, how could we implement agile Scrum-based development and CMMI level 3 definition. But okay, there are some issues, we don't go there. Okay, of this, let's not go to the details here. This is just one survey. It's not academic paper. they ask from practitioners and 83 professionals what are the main issues when they implement Scrum in their organizations. These are the four biggest issues as the result in the, in this. So planning and estimation. So if how to do planning, how to balance the, with that, the overall picture, this architectural issues, and how to do estimation of size of the project. Okay, this is nothing special to Agile. It has been an issue, this estimation, in the field for ages. But still, maybe Agile doesn't support that much. Difficulty to scale. Okay, we discussed much about that. They still think about that. Would need more support for how to scale it in the bigger organization. Rigid role means that the agile literature may have some, like Scrum, they have some specific definitions for very few roles, and like basic Scrum lacks of a role of architect. For example, there is no architect. There are no organizational level roles at all, which you often need in bigger organizations. So, abundance of meetings. It was found there that a lot of meetings. Could we have a bit less, please? And lack of IT technical practices. Okay, this relates to maybe Scrum, which is the mainstream in the field, because it doesn't have many, like we discussed last time. For example, extreme programming has more development practices. Okay, just a couple of thoughts of this. Trust is—it's one I've referred to it a couple of times already today, but it's a big issue in agile thinking. If you stop thinking of this, it comes in different levels. Self, like, if you have some signs of organization, and if you have a traditional, more traditional hierarchical organization, this is one question, how to balance with this. Self-organizing team or management, which has control, who has the control and how much control, who decides what, and so on. This is often a matter of trust, especially if you have hierarchical organization, the management has more control. It requires trust to give the control away to the self-oriented team. Okay, you need in multiple team setting, in bigger scale, you need trust between teams. Okay, always you do. Yeah. But then you need trust with the customer relationship, contracting. It's two times here, maybe it's important, by accident. But what I mean is this, and okay, this is very, very simplified. And polar side example, but you have, there are many different contracting models, have been for ages, and there are some ideas for Agile specifically. Again, we are not getting there. The basic thing in contracting in a software project is time, budget, and scope of the project. And to simplify this thing and difference is that in traditional way, you focus on the requirements and functionality. You define in the beginning the functionality you require in the project. You make the contract based on that. And you measure the success of the project based on that. Maybe you have some sanctions defined that if the supplier cannot make it in time or cannot deliver all the functionalities in time and so on. If you want to change requirements, you must have some rules in contract for that, and so on. And in agile, the way, in very agile, basic thinking is time boxing. Basically, you in the ideal form, you emphasize partnership and communication with the customer. You do time boxing, which means that the customer basically buys time. And it's all the time under the negotiation, what are the features we do. We negotiate each print again, what are the features, how to prioritize the features, and so on. And when the time ends, we see what was the result. And so, I don't know if you get the point based on this already, but it's a difference if you do this, try this kind of time boxing. It's a lot of trust is needed. You really need to trust the supplier. If you don't, in contrast to the traditional way, in which you define the requirements in detail, and then you make contract based on the requirements. You must be sure that the supplier does the thing properly if you do time boxing. Trust is needed. Okay, this is the kind of side note. One special case, if you do business with public sector in Finland, or in EU, at least, there are rules that you must have competitive tendering, so you must arrange competition if your acquire is more than 60,000 euros. So if you buy a software project worth of 60,000, it usually is, you must have competition. So I don't know how they tackle these issues in practice. I don't know the business actually there. I just explain some thinking. These issues must be tackled somehow. I don't know how they do it in practice. But this is the background in the legislation. So it might be if you do it a bit from traditional basis, you first do requirements, or in that model, you first do a contract. I don't know how to do that. You often in the public sector as a customer, you buy this work also from some consulting company or some software house to do detailed requirements for the project. Then after you have the specs, you arrange this competition, public competition, and then I don't know how to evaluate in practice, but then you enter the actual development stage. And there is a lot of agile discussed in this setting also, that much I know, but I don't know how they tackle these kind of contract issues in practice. But this challenges some of the agile ideas, like that partnership. How is that possible? If in agile, ideal agile model, you have a partnership with one or possibly it's not the smart strategy to have only one supplier and be dependent on that, but maybe you have a couple of suppliers which you use all the time. It's wise strategic business often, but in public sector, I don't know how you can do that by the law. And how this all affects contracting, it's an interesting question. And how we can alert changes. So if we follow this whole thing like I explained, that we have this public competition based on some specs. So what happens after that? So if we step in agile after that and actually take extreme agile kind of thinking on board there and basically forget the requirements and change as many as we can. And so I don't know how law reacts to this. So is this kind of fail the other parties in the competition? I don't know if you get the problem here, but let's not use more time for this. But it's okay. We discussed this more in a couple of words. I'm not getting details here, but we have nowadays different models. Some of the points I've discussed today, like that lack of architect's role or these kind of organizational roles and activities we need to coordinate agile in the bigger scale. There is pretty much common understanding nowadays that we need something like that. There are different kind of models created for that, how to support that scaling up agile, what kind of organizational roles we might need, what kind of practices, organizational practices, coordination practices we would need between teams or on upper level of an organization when we do agile in a bigger scale. So many of the things I've discussed based on the material and today are kind of discussed and tackled in some way in the field already. So, and here is just a list. There is one paper. If you want to check one, take then that one for the beginning. It includes a comparison of different models that has been created for supporting the scaling agile. And this is just without going into details, but some picture. I think this is best known model of this scale agile framework. You can see here the most important for us today is that you can see here that in the bottom layer, here is one team and the practices. You have something like Scrum here. And in your Scrum book, you have these practices explained in detail. But you don't find anything that's above that. There you have program or you have some specific software, big software project or product or so on in the middle layer. And there are some suggestions of the principles and roles and practices you could have to coordinate that level of the organization. Then you have something else still about that. And portfolio level, how to manage the whole portfolio of different projects or products in-house. Okay. We are going to end our agile discussion here. This is the basis for many things discussed today in the field, like these, I don't know, where we are heading next year or so on. These are, the hottest new keywords in the field nowadays related to the agile. The discussion is, agile is nothing new. It's business as usual. Everybody does that nowadays. Nowadays, the discussion is more on lean companies usually related or DevOps. Your assignment is about lean. I didn't discuss about that here. Let's see what you get out of that in your assignment. I try to find some readings for the course readings of DevOps. Still, there are some papers in last year readings, but I still try to find if I find something new.
my last words here of this agile. I hope you, I took some viewpoints here and there. I don't know if you got any coherent picture of this, the overall picture of this all, but I hope that you get some idea that how agile affects different processes in the whole organization or business in development overall. And the more important for me is that in this course, agile, it's just some term we have been discussing during the past 15 years, but it's just one example. You take any new method in the field, now or later, you can apply the same kind of thinking, the same questions we have tried to look at a bit with agile. You can take and try to apply the same questions to any new method in the field. And agile is just a good example of, because there is exceptionally lot of information about agile in the field. Not many, many things have been discussed and studied so much. So let's continue from here to the other topics. Let's close for today. Thank you.